Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the War Report. And for those of you, this is your first time, we welcome you as well. Today, we're going to have two shows in one. We have our guest, who will be coming on in a few seconds, and she will be with us for the whole hour. That's somewhere around 2:35 or so, Dr. Jesse Turner is going to make a return visit, and he is going to give us the first update on his trip. He started his trip 3 days ago, Thursday of this past week, and each week for the next 8 weeks, he will be giving us updates around that 2:30, 2:40 mark. So with that, let me give just a very short, brief intro on our guest. Her name is Lori Gabriel. She has taught music, drama, choir, orchestra for 27 years in public schools in Colorado, most recently in Colorado Springs, School District 11. She spent 4 years and a chunk of her own money creating the film that we're going to be talking about. Welcome, Laura, and how are you?
I'm great, James. Thanks for having me on.
Well, did I do justice in terms of giving you this brief intro? Because if you talk for 27 years, there's a whole lot more that you can add to my little brief one-sentence intro.
Well, sure. You know, as you go through that many years, you see a lot of changes coming along. So I've kind of got the whole scope from 1984 to the present, and I talk about how things have changed in not just my classroom, but all of my peers across the country.
Now, correct me. You started when you were in kindergarten, right? The 27 years.
No, I popped out of the University of Denver, ready to go, raring to go, and started teaching in inner city Denver. And I went from there to almost the opposite situation in a very wealthy private school in Maryland. And then when it came to Colorado Springs School District 11, I taught at many different schools and saw all different kinds of situations. So I've seen just about everything you can imagine.
During your 27 years, where in that time span did you begin to see and experience the things that led you to wanting to do this film?
Well, even when I started, there were things that weren't as I would have done them exactly, but I did have a lot more freedom, especially in my curriculum and how I taught. I didn't have a lot of input into how I grouped my students and some other variables. But about the mid-90s, I started to notice well, the first thing that happened was they brought the Saturn Corporation in to our district and paid them a few million dollars to teach us how to run our classrooms like a business. And we had to start calling our students stakeholders, and they spent a lot of
Wait a minute.
Time.
You started calling your students stakeholders?
Yeah, we had to call them stakeholders, and they talked about our students as though they were products. And I just kept wondering, why is the Saturn Corporation coming in here, the car company? why are they telling us?
Oh, excuse me, let me stop you. Laura, I didn't get that. When you said Saturn, I'm thinking it was some other type. But is Saturn the GM division car?
Yes. I am talking about the car company, yes. And they at our teacher meeting at the beginning of the year, they raffled off a Saturn so that we would all like Saturn and, hey, Saturn's great. Come on into our classrooms and tell us what to do. And so that's where it kind of began. And we did that, their plan for a year. And, oh, well, that wasn't working. So then we brought in another plan. We spent several more $1 million on a Malcolm Baldrige plan. And that's a businessman, not an educator. And once again, we had all these big notebooks we had to go through that just stated the obvious, really. Well, you need to have a class mission statement. And, well, you need to know what you're going to do before you do it. And really simple stuff, but in these big manuals, which, P.S., were filled with grammatical errors. And then we were given that, and we did that for 2 years. And they spent millions training us. And they hired subs because they trained us during the school year. So they took all the teachers out of the classroom and brought in subs for our kids while we went to this training on how to make a mission statement. And then we did that for 2 years. Then we brought in another strategy and another and another and another. Until now, you've got just one company that's doing all of it, really. I mean, there are a few smaller companies, but Pearson is really running the whole thing now. And what scares me now is it's starting to get a little deceptive if you don't do your homework. They call it different things, which is what they were doing then, but now it's the same company calling it different things. Now we're going to do the park test. Oh, well, we reject the park test. Yay, the victory for Arkansas. They rejected the park test. They're replacing it with the ACT Aspire test. Also a Pearson product. So Pearson can't really lose, because as long as we're blaming the teachers for the failures of each one of their products, districts will just keep buying more and more and more. Oh, well, this one will really get the teachers on task. Instead of just, what was wrong with it the way we were doing it when the teachers were writing their own curriculum? I wrote the district standards for my district in the 80s, and they were great standards. I wrote it with a team of 8 teachers. We spent a lot of time on it. They gave us a fruit tray or something and some credit points for certification, but we didn't ask for $1 million to do that. We were happy to do it because we wanted it. We wanted our voices in there. So we did it for free, and we used those for a little while until they brought in all this corporate stuff, and those were just ditched as soon as that happened.
This, and I want everyone to listen to what you just said. This is way before 2002 and No Child Left Behind.
Yes, it was already creeping in. Mm-hmm.
Somewhere maybe as much as 7 years before No Child Left Behind.
Yes.
So you guys, being the state, were into high stakes. Were the stakes as high then and initially as they are now? Mm-hmm. I was about to say you were into the high stake testing game mid-90s.
No. Right, yeah. This was before the high stakes testing. So then when...
Was it supposedly evaluation product that would allow you to see what your students are doing, where their weak points are, and then be able to go in and work individually with a student and or a group, or you just got, if you got anything back at all,
in
raw numbers?
It was more general than that. It wasn't used to assess teachers, and it wasn't really used to assess students. It was more a method of, here's how you're going to make your classroom better. You're going to use this format, plan, do, study, act. And with this came huge piles of paperwork. You know, the way that you're really going to improve your students is to spend 50% of your time filling out these objectives and making sure that everything you're doing is measurable and knowing what district standard you're addressing at every moment. So when that stuff came along, we had to now write on the board. Students, today we are addressing district standard number 3. Students will play musical instruments. Now I will go over the measurement of how we are going to know you are playing your musical instruments and by what date we're going to know you are playing your musical instrument. I mean, it was just
I want to compliment you. I want to compliment you. You do a good robot.
Oh, well, I'm also an actress, so.
You had me going. I was ready to, you know, pull out pencil and paper.
Yeah,
let me share something with you.
Yeah. The kids had to keep a notebook. This is an orchestra class where I've got 45 minutes to get my kids tuned and do our warm-up scale and then get through our music program. So now we've got to bring notebooks, and at the top of each thing, we've got to write the date. And today we're working on the district standard. We will play our musical instruments and keep all of this in giant files, giant notebooks everywhere, rubrics everywhere. That's my least favorite word, rubric. I mean, they're helpful in one way or another, but the way they were used with us. So we would keep these in these notebooks, and then we would turn them in to the principal weekly. And he never read them. I knew it because I would write things in there like, I'm going to have the students wash my car and polish my shoes today. And nobody ever came to say anything to me about it. And so that satisfied my test that no one was actually reading. How would they have time? The principals could never read all that stuff or even understand it. My principal wasn't a music teacher. So if I said, I'm going to have them working on the A minor chord, and I'm going to do it in this fashion, how's he going to assess that I did that? So we kind of all just humored it and did it because we had to. But then we started having to cancel our after-school program. This paperwork got so immense, and this is still before No Child Left Behind, that we had an amazing forensics team at our school. Well, we had to cancel that because teachers had to do this data input until 7 o'clock at night, and we got rid of chamber orchestra, and we got rid of tutoring for students after school, and some of the sports went away. As they added more and more and more of this, we've got to be measuring. Everything's got to be measured, and it's got to be measured in 10 different places, and it's got to be graphed on a bar graph and charted and sent to the parents daily. It's just overkill.
Well, you just took me back to a place 20 years before your mid-95, around 1974. I'm an assistant professor in sociology at UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
The year before, in 73, I went off and did, as a visiting professor, research associate at the National Institute of Education. I come back, and the first thing that I learned is that we now, the teaching staff, we have to give this evaluation at the end of our course.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going like, you know, what is this? You know, we have to give students, pass out this exam. There will be machine scored. And I'm going, you got to be kidding me. And one of my colleagues came up to me, and he went on to explain, while you were gone, it was decided, da-da-da-da, and that students needed to have input. And then he said to me, he said, bottom line is, the inmates are going to start running the asylum. Now, this was college level, right? The first year, none of us gave the exams. Second year, the administration hired students to come around, pass out the exam, collect them, and then take them back to the administration, and then they would do their evaluation. I left UCLA, and I think the end of school year 77, I left teaching. I came back to teaching 11 years later, and I was an adjunct that first year before going back into a tenure-track position. And here's what I discovered. Some of the things that you're going to talk about. Among the adjuncts, the equivalent of teaching to the student evaluation. They would bring in cookies every day. They would bring in all kinds of pastries every class.
Uh-huh.
They would tell jokes. They gave out grades like A's, B's, and C's to anyone who was on the register. And it became edutainment among them. Because if you didn't get a good evaluation, you wouldn't get hired for the next quarter.
Right.
And if you were trying to get into a tenure track position, it was so scary. It didn't bother me because I didn't give a blank. And I just started thinking about this during our conversation. The things that teachers are going through now, the fear and the teaching to the test, we were doing it. This would have been back in 88 or so, I think, when I came back to, 88 when I came back to teaching. And this is way before you guys got hit with it. We were sort of like the guinea pigs. But everything that we've talked about leads me to my next question, and that is, it was this that you things that you just talked about that led you to want to do your film or become an activist and do something. What was the motivating factor? The sum, put it this way, the sum of all of your motivation that led you to do the film.
The number one thing, James, is that I was hearing all these complaints in the teacher's lounge, and I was seeing teachers crying, and I shared a room with a gal who had just gotten her teaching degree, and she was so excited, and she didn't make it 6 months. She quit. She couldn't deal with the paperwork, and so off she went, took another career somewhere. But no one was saying anything, and I'm a big loudmouth, and I was always the one standing up at the staff meeting saying, this isn't right. We can't cancel our after-school clubs for debt entry. I'm not going to do it. And the other teachers would come out of the meeting, oh, that was so brave, Lori. Thank you for saying that for all of us. And I'm like, well, yeah, I would have liked it if we all would have said it together, but I'm happy. And they say, oh, but we'll get fired, we'll get fired. And I never did get fired. I've never been fired. I have quit. But I didn't get fired for speaking out. And I thought, you know what, I'm a loudmouth. And I'm going to tell this story on behalf of all of us. And in the process of making the film, I traveled from Washington State to Washington, D.C. And the story is the same everywhere. And the frustrations are the same everywhere. And sometimes, you know, it took me a long time to make this. And I would start to get discouraged and think, oh, I'm never going to finish. Maybe I'll do something else and make some money for a little while. But then I'd hear something like the suicide of Rigoberto Ruelas in California. And he's the California teacher who killed himself right after his scores were published in the paper. And
yeah, he jumped off a bridge.
He was labeled as an ineffective teacher. And this guy was doing everything he could to keep kids out of gangs and help them get to college. And he was so inspiring to them. But yet, here's this score in the paper based on what? The standardized test. One snapshot in a kid's life. And he's labeled, and the public doesn't understand how this affects you. This is our calling, you know. I was wanted to be a teacher when I was in kindergarten. I had my little classroom of dolls, and that progressed to I would gather the neighborhood children, and they'd all have their.
See, I was right. I was right when I said you started in kindergarten. Okay.
Yeah. Oh well, yeah. But every teacher I know is the same thing. I was called to this. People say, "Oh, it's teachers' union." They're just there because it's an easy job and they want the money and what are they complaining about and, oh, they don't want to be assessed because they're afraid people will find out they're not doing their job. And all of that's false. And the film talks about all of that. And I've had people coming. We've had three screenings now. And I've had people come out of the screenings that aren't teachers say, I had no idea of any of this. Thank you for sharing that. And the teachers were coming out just crying, saying, thank you for telling my story. I'm too afraid to tell it myself. Some people are even too afraid to come to the film. I don't want to be seen supporting. I don't understand. So, yeah, my goal is just to give teachers and parents and students, too, the courage to stand up and say, no, we're not going to accept the status quo. We're not going to accept what's happening to us. And I'm thrilled to see these movements. I never thought I would see these movements like the parents are putting together.
Interject this. I know that it took you 4 years. You travel extensively.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a short description of that four-year period and the traveling that you did.
I started with people who I knew were vocal, and so I started with teachers who have now become journalists and authors, and then I went to Save Our Schools convention or conference, I guess you would call it, in D.C., the first one that they had, and that's where I met Matt Damon, and his mom's a teacher, of course, and got a lot of voices from the education advocates that are not afraid to be vocal at all, Diane Ravitch and Jonathan Kozol. They weren't teachers, but they understand their cause, and they're not afraid to be vocal about it. And, yeah, just the same stories across the board. And it's not all just about testing. There are other things in there. Like we need smaller class sizes, and we need individualized instruction. We're telling every single kid, you've got to be an expert at math. Well, I was horrible at math, and I hated math. And I knew it from, sixth grade. sure, yes, I would like to be able to balance my checkbook and all that, but I was having to take advanced algebra, and I'm like, look, I'm going to be a music teacher. And I hated school, and I would cry every night. I didn't get to practice my cello because I was trying to get this advanced algebra, which, by the way, I never did get, but it's okay because I don't need it. So it's an important subject, and it's important to get a base in all of this. But we need to find out what kids' strengths are and say, we're going to nurture your strengths. We're not going to sit here and pound on you. We're going to take away everything you love until you get this advanced algebra.
In your film, just enumerate the issues as you can remember so that we can get an idea of the scope of what you're presenting in your film.
Sure. Yeah, I've got four chapters. And the first chapter is that children cannot be educated as part of a herd. And that includes putting them in groups that they're not ready for. Now, I'm not an advocate of tracking, and I'm not an advocate of labeling, but I have seen kids, well, just in my own orchestra class, I've got kids, it's sixth grade orchestra, period. And so I've got kids that have been playing for 5 years and kids that are just starting. Same thing at every grade level. And I wasn't allowed to say, let the advanced kids have something extra to do, and let's give some extra time to the kids who are just starting. So everybody was frustrated. So herding that way, and then just herding by interest, saying, you know, whatever's on this test, that's what you're interested in. I don't care if you're interested in being an artist, it's not on the test. So that's the first chapter. And chapter two is that teachers are not the only people responsible for a child's success. So society is included in this. Parents are included in this. And we've seen what they're calling the demise of education, the downfall of education. All these kids are getting worse and worse at school, and it's the teacher's fault. Well, society is changing. So we've got entitlement. We've got impatience. We've got kids that don't want to sit and listen to a lecture because that's not what it is like in society now. So we have to change with society, and parents need support. Most of the parents I work with are very supportive, but you have those other parents who do say, well, how dare you tell my child he has to practice? Well, he's not coming to the concert. He doesn't want to. So we need to work as a team, you know. And then the third chapter go ahead.
Now, let me go through the second chapter.
Yeah.
That was the chapter that I loved everything, but that one the most. And the reason is, I'm working on a show that I hope to do later in the summer called The Blame Game, where now we blame teachers for everything.
Yes.
Years and years ago, one late, late night, I stay up to 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock almost every night studying, working, what have you. I had this great epiphany, and I did a chart, like a pie chart, and I tried to assess just off the top of my head in this pie chart, what percentage of each of what do they call the stakeholders in this game contribute to the child's success in terms of learning? And I said from kindergarten to maybe third or fourth grade, when a kid comes to kindergarten and he can't tie his shoes, doesn't know his name, and da 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 da, that's 100% on the parents. This is me talking.
Right.
Yep. And by third, fourth grade, if you can't do da-da-da-da, then it's parents and the teacher. And I go all the way up the chart to get to the point where the student has to bear some of the blame for his or her not being able to do X, Y, and Z. And
that's
all the way
right
up to society and the government and the whole nine yards. Another what I was doing was that I was, that night, I was saying, everyone has a share of the blame to carry here. Because I taught in K through 12 when I was a substitute teacher in graduate school. And, of course, I went to K through 12 in public schools. And I knew there were kids in my class, like maybe in your class, who didn't want to be there in elementary school, junior high, high school, didn't want to learn crap, and et cetera, they had to share the responsibility. And so I did this really deep thinking type thing. I can't find it X number of years later. But that's why I loved your chapter, is that you said everyone has a share of blame here. Most teachers won't say it because they're afraid to. And then when they do, of course, it's attacking parents, it's attacking kids, and this bad teacher type thing. But you said it.
I don't want to use the word blame.
I know you don't. This reality, is me talking.
It doesn't mean that they're bad parents. Sure, I would like it if they... But some parents, when I was working in Five Points, kids haven't bathed when they were 16. And they don't know how to do everything they need to do. Or maybe they have to work six jobs and they can't read to their kid every night. So I don't know if blame is the right word, but let's just take it into account. You know, don't put it all on the teachers. And then when it comes to testing, you're saying some kids don't want to be in school. And there's a lot of kids that don't want to take a test. And they just sit there and make draw smiley faces on a test. They sleep. They color. Because what do they care? And, you've got our jobs writing on whether or not this kid feels like filling in the right bubbles that day, even if he can fill them in. Maybe he's not going to. A whole school of kids could get together and say, hey, let's just tank this thing and see what happens. It's a little precarious to have your job in the hands of that, you know.
Yeah. Chapter 3.
Chapter 3. Teachers and students are people, not machines. And that just gets into what we're just talking about is, we're now everybody's a data point. And the only way we know my kids are doing well is how well they did on this test. Well, I've got a different experience from when I taught a private orchestra. I didn't give grades. I didn't give tests. I didn't tell kids what percentage they were for that day. I just walked around and said, here's what you need to do. Put your hand like this and count this rhythm like so. And they knew how they were doing. They knew they were improving. Their parents knew they were improving. The kids felt it. I communicated with all the parents regularly. Hey, he needs to practice this certain thing a little bit more, and he's doing great on this. So everybody's communicating. Everybody knows. We don't need a number or a data point. So how ridiculous would it be for some outsider who isn't even a teacher to come into that situation and say, okay, I want all you kids to play this song right now, and I'm going to decide whether your teacher is good or not just based on how you perform this specific song here right now. Well, that sounds ridiculous, but that's what we're doing. So that's the machine part. And then the last one is that teachers, not politicians and corporations, should make decisions about education. And it just goes into the fact that we are never asked. We're never consulted. It's just, here's what it is. You're going to do it whether you like it or not. And that's where the word malpractice starts coming in, because we feel like we're being asked to do something that is completely wrong for a student, and we have no say in the matter. And that's where you've got the teachers quitting. They're not quitting because of money. I don't think they're quitting because a few parents don't cooperate. I don't think they're quitting because of rowdy kids. They are quitting because they are given no voice in how to do their job, and it's a profession that they went to school to learn how to do, and they're being told by someone who never did their job how to do it.
Absolutely. Oh, and by the way, in preparation for our conversation, I think it was last night, I said when you go to bed at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, almost all, every day and night seems the same. I came up with an evaluation system for the politicians. I don't have time to lay that out, but I think you would crack up when you hear how I laid it out. Now, I'm laughing at myself here. The end point was that you, like everyone is doing now, you're providing solutions or suggestions for solutions. And when I was teaching, when I was writing, we didn't do that. We just identified the problem in as much depth, detail as possible, and as accurately as possible. And it was up to others to come up with solution and, or in this case, policy. you go that extra step and you do the policy recommendations.
I have a, at the end of each chapter, I've got a list of solutions. But my big main solution at the end is we need to restore classrooms to teachers. And we, there's such a mistrust of teachers now that's been created, helped along very well by the media, that people say, oh, well, we couldn't possibly, our schools would crumble if we left this to teachers. Well, there are some schools called teacher-led schools. They don't have administration. They don't have grades or testing or any of that. And they have wonderful success. And their graduates go on to be imaginative entrepreneurs, owning their own business, very successful people. And I show these schools and I show what happens in these schools. And unfortunately, they're not public schools. But this is what I want to see. My dream is to see that in the public schools. So once people see that at the end of the film, oh my gosh, that's what our public schools could be like. Oh, but how would we ever afford it? Well, we're spending millions, billions on this testing and Common Core stuff, and we could use that to make our public schools like those schools. So that's what I want people to come away from the film.
Can I propose another takeaway?
Oh, sure.
That the key here is that you're talking about is the process of learning. And by that, I mean with the standardized test movement, we've taken away from teachers the process of teaching the and the kids the process of learning.
Yes.
The interaction
yes.
between
yes.
the teacher and the, so that relationship, which I've said, I think even last week, it is such a crucial part of being a student and learning is being mm-hmm. able to relate to your teacher and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and every kid is different, so you can't treat them all the same. Now, at these teacher-led schools, they do what's called project-based learning, and the kids, whatever they're into, they get their standards. They still do address the state standards, and so they do have to learn history and math and science. They're not just running around out learning to be a rock star or an astronaut. So they're learning a wide variety of things, but doing it with a twist of what they like to do. So if you're an artist, you're doing a mural on the Revolutionary War. And if you're a photographer, you're into photography, you're doing a photography project on chemistry or whatever it is. So the kids, I mean, I show some of the projects. They come up with amazing things. We think, oh, well, we can't leave it to kids and teachers. It's got to be somebody else deciding. And when you've got the teachers there as coaches, but the students are really responsible. When you go into these schools, and they are like adults. They're college ready. Talk about college ready. They know how to schedule them, how to pace themselves to get their projects done. And they evaluate themselves. They are part of the grades. It's not really a letter grade, but it's a, you know, did you do what you set out to do? And if not, why not? And they do all this with the teachers, so they're not sitting there being lectured. And they get to go out in the community and get with mentors in their field. So we had a gal we interviewed that was, she's interested in politics, and they let her leave the school 3 times a week to volunteer with a campaign. And there's another guy, they let him leave school to work with people in the field of agroecology, and now he's successful in that field. So it's just, let it be individualized. Well, you can't individualize it if you don't know the student. Like, I'm talking about personally, face-to-face. So that mm-hmm. can't be done. You can't instruct a student if you've never met that student.
Well, this is the point that I really want to get over, and you make it so well in your project. In a few seconds here, we will hopefully have Dr. Turner to come on and mm-hmm. add to our conversation. And so in the meantime, there was a teacher from somewhere in the country. I don't usually tell where this particular teacher is from. She wrote a beautiful poem. I always said a word wrong, that I had invited her to come on and read her poem to us, because it dealt with that last question in terms of the process of learning. and she's trying to get through, but the lines are busy. If she does get through, I'm going to bring her on because I think you appreciate her. Okay, I think the caller is there. Hello, okay. Caller.
Yeah, hi, James. It's Joe from Connecticut. Great
yes,
show today, Lori.
Thank
Lori,
you.
I love what you're saying. I absolutely love what you're saying. I'm a teacher here in Connecticut, and I'm pretty discouraged myself, and it's really hard to keep the fight. And I thank you for doing what you're doing because you give me the strength to go on.
Oh, I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah. I wrote a poem this week I would like to read to you guys, if you'll let me. I think it sort of fits in with what you're doing, Lori.
Great.
If that's okay.
Go.
Please.
Go.
Okay, here it goes. It's called In the Beginning. In the beginning, there was a good teacher. And the good teacher taught with passion and with eloquence. The good teacher taught with love and compassion. The good teacher touched many lives forever with light and love and learning. Those were the best of times. One day, the good teacher awoke to a siege of terror creeping into her classroom. The great teacher displacement had begun while she was asleep. Her voice was dismissed. Her power was slowly drained. And her students stumbled more, fell more, searched more, and started losing the precious seeds of education. These are the worst of times. These are the times that try men's souls. These are the events that spark a revelation, a renovation, a reimagination, a reformation, and most importantly, a revolution. Let the revolution break forth. End of poem.
Awesome.
You see why I invited her?
Yes. I love that people are using whatever their skill set is, you know, all different, whether it's film or I've heard some great rap songs on the subject, and just everybody coming together to attack it from every angle possible. That's fantastic, Joe.
Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing, Lori.
Thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome.
Okay. Well, hopefully, again, Dr. Turner will call in if he hasn't already called, and we can get an update on his trip.
Yeah.
Lori, there's a couple of things. If he comes on, I want to point out some similarities between the two of you, and that you both went on, I can't rule, like either Kickstarter or GoDaddy or GoFundMe or what have you. Indiegogo, yeah, to try and raise some funds to help support your project. I've only been on the social media thing for, 13 months now. Had no idea about anything, and one of the things that I started recognizing was that every once in a while, a teacher like yourself would put up a request for funds for a film, for a book, or for what have you. And they would never get the money.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, and they weren't asking for a lot of money, you know, $5,000, $20,000, or $30,000 for a film. And so I started looking at those sites and saw where people were asking for $1 million, and they got $1 million to do a film. One, I guess the biggest one was a $6 million to do a full feature film based on a TV show. And
yeah.
I'm looking at all of this, and I'm saying, why do our teachers, our activists, why do we not get the type of support that these people who are doing entertainment films, that are doing all kinds of things, get so easily? I know in your case, you went on, you didn't get a quarter of what you were looking for, and
that's true.
That disturbs me.
Well, first I want to say that I'm extremely grateful that people I didn't even know were donating $100. Like, they didn't know me or my work or anything, but it was something they felt so strongly about. But I think so many people are so resigned, James. I think people feel like, oh, we can't fight this, so why even bother? I've heard so many teachers, Wes, said, why didn't you tell them why you quit? Well, it's not going to do any good anyway. I mean, they're kind of right, because when I quit, I wrote a letter, a 12-page letter to the school board. I sent it to every one of them and the superintendent saying, here are the problems, here's why I quit. And I got a letter back from their lawyer saying, you will stop talking about this now. You will stop saying negative things about this, or else, you know, there wasn't any, here's what's going to happen if you don't stop. But it was a letter from their lawyer, and that they didn't care that I had quit or why. And I think there is just kind of this apathy of, oh, let's just go with the status quo. I guess the government knows what they're doing. I'm reading in the papers that what these corporations are doing is fine, and assessment sounds good. They make it sound really good. You know, oh, Common Core, no child left behind. Everybody's going to be equal. It's great. People don't realize what it really is. And so I think they're like, well, why should I fund things about teaching when the government's got this handled? They don't understand.
Well, you're being generous.
Well,
but I'm at liberty to be able to say almost anything. Well, not almost anything I want to say and when. But you're being generous, and I understand that. But for me, it's really disturbing. Teachers who are working and those who are in states where they have unions, even those who states that don't have union, they have associations, they pay monthly dues. And parents, they have, you know, if they have jobs or what have you, $5, $10, $15, $20, $50, whatever it is, they can do that. But so far, my year, 13, 14 months, have not seen it really happen. And so it's disturbing, because we are trying to do something for all of us, not just ourselves,
right,
when we go out and ask for these projects. And it's a pittance. Oh, I just heard that Dr. Turner is on. So let me stop ranting and bring him on.
Okay.
Hi, Jesse.
Hello, hello, James. How are you doing? I was just calling.
I'm okay.
That bumper-to-bumper traffic, that's all. I'm okay now.
Okay. We only have about maybe 7-8 minutes left. And Lori's on the line here, and she definitely wanted to say hello to you, and she's a fan of yours. In fact, she wants to meet you in D.C. Okay,
yes,
let the two of you guys talk for a minute.
I'm going to be working my way toward you. I'm going to start in Chicago. I'm trying to set up a screening tour where I hit all the cities between Chicago and D.C., but I'm driving. I'm not walking.
No,
but
no,
I've been keeping up on your Facebook.
More distance.
So I'll be at the BAPS Congress, and I'm looking forward to meeting you.
Oh, I'm looking forward to meeting you, Laurie. I'm looking forward to seeing the preview of your film. I've seen little pieces of it that you put up. But I'm looking to see the whole thing. Yeah, I haven't seen the whole thing yet. So I'm
Jesse,
looking forward to it. I can't wait. Yes.
This is day 3, or actually day 4. Tell us what's been happening.
Yes. All right. Every day I'm meeting with teachers and parents. So day 1, I met with, in a very rural setting, a country store, opt-out parents. And the dean of education at my school also walked. So that was a significant for a dean of education to walk and support the walk. But every day I've been meeting people. Yesterday I was in Willimantic. So Willimantic is an old industrial town with a large Hispanic population. And Rose Rios had a salon. And so I was with bilingual educators, special educators, even met the mayor of the town and some board members. But every day has been exciting. Today I had teachers walk with me in the morning. So that means they got to walk 2.5 hours. So I had two teachers and one of the teachers' husbands interested in their math teacher. So it was really cool for the math teacher to be joining me. And then I've just come back. What took me so long is I just came back from a church event where the Walker Man was discussing to the congregation about the immorality of this stuff. So every day has been exciting, and it's just very different than 2010 changed when I walked. Although a few newspapers, a few people knew, I didn't have people emailing me, calling me, wanting to walk with me, asking me to speak at events. We're on the road for 40 days, and there are over 20 events at this moment. And I'm in Trinity. I'm at Trinity College tomorrow at the Institute of Urban Initiatives, and that's another exciting place. So at 12 o'clock, I'll be there. And it's just a different ball game. I think with this Ed DeForma stuff that no one believes them anymore. And so in 2010 and before that, I would tell people that this is the wrong way to go. And they would question me. Nobody questions me now. They say, of course, it's the wrong way to go. What do we got to do now? How do we overturn it? How do we stop them? Because they're crazy. So that's what I'm finding out. It's good. It's a good feeling. I don't have to defend this position that says children are more than test scores. I don't have to defend public education from privatizers. I don't have to do that this time around. Even people that knew me the last time around would say, but, you know, they're doing it for children. Now everybody looks around and says, no, they're not doing it for children. They're doing it for money. So that's the difference, right, James?
Right. Lori, you have something to say?
Oh, I agree, but I do still get resistance from it. I do still hear we have to have these assessments, otherwise we aren't going to know whether teachers are doing their jobs. So there are other ways to assess it that are more personal. But so I'm glad that you're getting support and not hearing that message so much. I'm really glad to hear that.
Well, what happens, Lori, is I do a little show. And what I do is I look at the Fed's data. So I look at three of the major impact studies. And the experimental group, Jim and I did this on the show, they're complete massive failures. And then I'll look at that. They did another impact study on teacher evaluations. And the same thing. So everything the Feds have proposed, I do a little, maybe it's 10 minutes of whatever I do. I put it up on the board. I actually turn it into a baseball analysis. I say impact study. Reading first, strike one, 2009 supplementals. You know, strike one, two, three, and then I do some others, and I say, three outs. How come Monty Duncan gets four outs and four strikes?
Oh, that kind of stuff. I love it. That's great.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. I start off with looking at their data, and I'm saying, why are we looking at kids' test scores? Why are we looking at teachers? Shouldn't we be looking at the people that have spent $1 trillion? And have no data to support anything they've done. So
exactly.
That's the stuff. So it's helpful because the audience, I think, their percentage, is, when I did this in 2010, I was defending teachers. Now I'm aggressively attacking. I'm attacking the Feds. And I'm saying, this is the emperor without clothes. And I use their data. So it only takes me about 5-10 minutes. When we meet in D.C., I'm sure I'll do a little bit of that. It's been very effective. So the naysayers, if there are naysayers in the audience, they don't want to talk about this. Yeah, but it's been good. It's been good, and it's amazingly inspiring. Know what it's like to have some teachers join you in the morning and say, "Can we walk with you?" And I say, "Well, yeah, you can. Can we walk the whole thing with you?" I'm like, "Well, you can. It's going to be 2.5 hours." It's 10 miles, and on the thing, well, the whole thing. You know, they inspired me. I met two young sisters who opted out in Arvington, Connecticut, the farm community. They're the only two people that opted out in their whole district. And their mother and them was proud as can be. I took pictures with them. You know, here I am in a very conservative community, that there's a sign in the store that says beer, Bible, books, and bullets. I'm in this community, and the kids, they give me the thumbs up peace sign, power to the people sign. So we're winning now.
Jesse, are you putting up these pictures so we can see them?
I've been trying, you know, yes, James, I'm trying to put up the pictures at the country store. I put up some pictures at Rose's yesterday. I put up the pictures from today. It's like my whole day. This is my whole life now. I thought I was supposed to be off. I'm only catching up, James. There's so much happening, so much good stuff. Things, it's almost like all I want to do is put on my phone and say, let me Twitter every comment that the people have made. It's almost like I could do this 24 hours a day. So, mm-hmm. Yes, I am putting up pictures. I'm trying to share the kinds of positive things that are going on. I think I'm about 2 days behind in doing that. I'll catch up, though.
Wow.
How are your feet doing? Yeah. Are your feet doing okay?
My feet blisters? Are okay, so I prepared for this. I prepared for the walk. I didn't just get up last Thursday and say that I'm going to walk 10 miles every day. We've been preparing it. We've been getting ready. So as we started going along the way, my wife usually walks with me. She doesn't walk the whole 10, but then there came a point where she'll walk 5 miles, and then I'll walk. I'll say, okay, I'll go around again, that kind of concept. And then we just started getting ready. The closer I came to June, the more and more distance that I added in there. And it's been a good 6-7 months preparation.
Wow.
So my feet are holding up.
We have about 2 minutes left, so let's do a 30-minute wrap-up. 30 seconds, I'm sorry, wrap-up for each of us. Lori, why don't you go first?
I just want to say, if people would like to help, you talked about funding. The film's done, but we're looking for distribution funding now, especially to fund the trip from Chicago to D.C. And people can go to healourschools.org. There's a donation page there. They can also buy the DVD there. Or they can like our Heal Our Schools documentary Facebook page, and I have daily updates on that page as well.
Okay. Jesse? 30 seconds.
We're winning. It's as simple as that. We're winning. The tide has turned, and every single day we're going to win more. And to these people are running away and ashamed and throwing their heads in the sand like an ostrich.
Okay. My 30 seconds. I'm going to take 60. I can do that. I am going to promote both of you guys all summer long. Jesse, you already know you're going to come on every week and do, 10, 15 minutes update. Lori, if you give me the information, I will post where you're going to be and when. I will also put up your GoFundMe site so that people, and we have a pretty large mailing list here, and I will do all of that. I will do everything I can do to help promote you guys and promote the cause and get you some funding. Jesse, I have a major campaign in the works for you that we're trying to do, and we will continue doing every day until we can hopefully get you across that barrier that you're trying to raise. By the way, people, he's only trying to raise $3,500, and so far he's raised $1,100 or something like that after 30 some odd days of requesting. So, people, I'll be nice. People, please get off your butts and do something here. So, that's what I'm going to do for the both of you. When I say I'm going to do, that's the War Report and the Team War, the people that are my right hand and my rocks. We have made a commitment to support you guys all the way to the finish line. And so
Thank you.
My time is up. It's just the beginning, Jesse. There's going to be a lot that we're going to do. We've worked on this weekend, and we're going to start putting it in play. And now, Lori, says that we'll add you to the playlist. With this, folks, I have to say goodbye. Our time is up. See you next week.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.